year, during Elul, to try to say one thing about the Dovid Hashem Ori, to try to understand what exactly it is that we're doing, and why specifically this Mizmor, what does this have to do with where we are. This year, I was bothered by a line at the end, and the line is the famous line, because even if you've only done a few Baratim Brachos, you've still gotten to this Maimer Chazal, and you've heard of it before. But at the end of the Dovid Hashem Ori, we say, Lulei Hamanti Liros Betuv Hashem Beretz Chaim. If only, it doesn't translate well. Lulei Hamanti, if only I believed that I would see the good of Hashem, the Eretz Chaim, in Olam Haba, if only I believed it, if only I knew that I was going to make it there. That's what David HaMelech says. Kaveh Hashem Chazak Yami Sudef of the Kaveh Hashem. Hope to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, strengthen yourself, get yourself ready, and hope to Hashem. So I'm going to ask you, how is it possible that the way Rashi says it, and it's really just a take from the Gemara, that Nakudalo, that Lule has dots on top of the Lamed and the Aleph, and on the bottom of the Lamed and the Aleph. There's two dots by the Lamed, two dots by the Aleph. Rashi says, Nakudalo for a Medrash. Said David HaMelech, Yodani, Sha'ata no sen tzchar l'tzadikim l'olam haba. I know you're going to reward tzadikim in olam haba. I realize that that's what you're going to do. You're going to give a reward. But I have no idea if I'm going to get a portion together with those tzadikim or not. I don't know if I'm going to be among those tzadikim. That's the Maimar Chazal. That's what Rashi quotes. They're darshaning out the dots that are right there by Lulei. And I have to ask you, come on. Do you really think that David HaMelech was saying about himself that he didn't know that he was going to Olam Haba? Now granted, David HaMelech was an Anav. But David HaMelech was a Chassid. One of the greatest Chassidim, Gedolei HaChassidim of all time, if not the one. He wrote Tehillim. Even if you say this is toward the beginning of his life, he still must have known how big of a tzaddik he was. It's impossible to think otherwise. The Gemara just finished telling us that David Melech's night comprised of him sleeping like a horse for the first 6 hours of it, where he would sit there and sleep, just doze off a little bit while learning, and then at midnight the harp would play or whatever would happen, and he'd be up for the rest of the night saying Tehillim, saying Mizmori Tehillim, and to be able to daven and to sit there and think. You're telling me that David HaMelech really thought he wasn't going to make it to Olam Haba? That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. How could it be that he would think that way? Even his chatoyim, even the chatoyim that are mentioned about David HaMelech, where the Navi seems clear that David HaMelech did this wrong and that wrong, etc., the Gemara explains each one of them. The Gemara goes through them. The Gemara in Shabbos Menahem Abay says that Kol Omer David in Ochata David Chote Eino Elatoa. That anybody who says that David HaMelech sinned, and anyone that says David HaMelech did something wrong, is mistaken. And people naturally think of themselves as better because they know why they did something more than other people would. If we're saying about David HaMelech that he was good with everything he did, that everything was fine, then certainly everything he did was fine. How could it be possible that David HaMelech thought of himself that he was never going to make it, or it's possible he wasn't going to make it until Olam Haba? Of course he's going to make it until Olam Haba. What was his kasha? So there are the Rishonim, the Malbim, the Radak. Malbim's not a Rishon. The Radak, the Ibn Ezra, who say a different answer. Had I not believed there was a future, said David HaMelech, had I not believed, Lulei Hamanti Liros B'Tuv Hashem Beretz Chaim, had I not believed that there was going to be an Olam Haba for me, I don't know how I'd be able to survive today. So David HaMelech, as much as we think of David HaMelech's life as being this idyllic, he's the king of the earth, so everything's all good, you got to remember, 30 years of his life, he was chased by his brothers out of the house, thinking that he was a mamzer. For 30 years, he wasn't in the house. Later on, when David HaMelech grew up and everything was done with the kingdom, even when he became king, he was chased by his father-in-law, Shaul HaMelech. A wife of his was taken away from him. Toward the end of his life, without Shalom, granted there were years of peace that happened at some point in between, but a melech's life, a king's life, is not an easy life. It's a life where everybody is constantly needing you, wanting something from you. This was not a peaceful setting where he was able to sit back, relax, and say everything's going to be okay. Said David HaMelech, had I not believed that there was a future, something to look forward to, had I not believed that I would eventually get some type of reward in the future, I don't know how I would have survived. And the truth is, this is the way B'nai Yisrael has survived for generations. The last 2,000 years How have we gotten through Gullus, through every pogrom, through every crusade, through every, even through the concentration camp? How did the Jews survive? All they said was, they said to themselves, listen, Mashiach's coming. We're about to get our reward. It's about to be Olam Haba. They survived because they knew there's an end to all this. This is not going to last forever. Something's going to end. At some point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, it's done. Now let's get you Olam Haba. They knew that. People know that. And we survived that way. People have survival mode that's able to go because we're thinking about what could be in the future. David HaMelech is really saying that. He's saying, I know that there's a possibility that I'm going to have something, and therefore I can live my life even through all the stars that I had. Things will be okay. I had emuna, I had manti, that I would see the Tzuv Hashem Eretz Chaim. And that's how the other Rishonim learn it. But Rashi, really, it's a Gemara Brachos Dalan Amanala. How do you understand the Gemara? What does the Gemara mean? First of all, you have to know the answer of the Gemara. The Gemara does give an answer. Gemara says he knew who he was. He knew he was a chassid, but he was afraid. What was he afraid of? Shema Yigro Machet. That line, Shema Yigro Machet, that something might happen, he might sin. And due to that sin, he might do something wrong, something might happen. That line given by the Gemara is an unbelievable line. Just to think about it. That David HaMelech, growing up as a chassid to the level where he wrote Sefer Tehillim, is afraid that he might do something wrong in the future. He might do something wrong, something that's so bad that he would lose all of his car in Olam Haba because of that one thing that he might do. It's a crazy attitude. It's a mix of how a person has to be in this world. Says the Ein Yaakov, I know who I am. I know what I've accomplished. I know what I've done. But I'm worried about what's going to be in the future. And the truth is, that's the second lesson that we can learn from this puzzle. Because aside from because I know that there is a car waiting for me, so therefore I'll be okay, the other lesson to be learned over here is to say to yourself, okay, I know I've done well. I know I've been good, but I should always be thinking to myself, can I do better? Can I make myself a little bit stronger? Shemi Yigro Machet is not being okay with where you are, complacent in understanding this is what I'm doing right now. It's, where do I want to be 2 years from now? Where do I want to be 5 years from now? Where am I heading? Am I heading toward this is who I am and I'm never going to change and this is my person? Or am I looking at where am I going to be? See, that idea of looking up and Ezeu Chacham HaRoeh Tzedakah, the type of person who looks toward the future and knows something good is going to happen, that is, you can see, that's something that's special. And the truth is, we know this, Al-Tamim Ba'atzmachad Yom Osecha. Don't believe in yourself until the day of death. Yochanan Kohen Gadol can prove that to his Elisha, Avuya. We know that concept. But that's true. But two lessons that can definitely be learned and understood from this, and I got it. But I'm going in a completely different direction. I'm going to take this in a completely different direction. And in order to get there, I need to ask two questions. And then I think we might have another shot here that will work, I think, perfectly within the context of the puzzle. Number one, is David asking for reward? Isn't that strange? That David is saying, if only I could see Olam Haba. Since when does a tzaddik work for Olam Haba? A tzaddik does what a Kadosh Baruch Hu tells him what to do, no matter what the reward is. Right? Even if a person is starting off in life and needs to think to himself, well, I'm going to be rewarded, I'm going to get something. But I'm taking it to Yisofa. You shouldn't do mitzvos just to be makabel pras. You should do the almanach to lower makabel pras. David HaMelech was certainly on the level of a person who wasn't doing mitzvos to accept the reward. So what was he saying? If only I could see Olam Haba, if only I'm going to get Olam Haba, I wish I'd be able to get that. What do you mean you wish? It's not about that. Do what you're supposed to do, and who cares if you're rewarded or not? Why did David HaMelech care so much that he was going to get Olam Haba? Question number one. Question number two. Why is Olam Haba referred to as Eretz HaChaim? Lulei Hamanti Leros B'Tuv Hashem, to see the goodness of Hashem, Be'eretz Chaim, in the land of life. Why is that the phrase referencing Olam Haba? Now, granted, I will give you two things on this question. Number one, Olam Haba is never depicted straight out in all of Tanakh. There is no pasuk that says straight out that a reward goes in the world to come. That's number one. You will never see a pasuk like that. So there are always these catchphrases that refer to Olam Haba. Sheol for Gehenna. Or something like Eretz HaChaim in theory could be used for that. But nonetheless, And my second thing is that Eretz Chaim really means the land where you're really living, which of course refers to the next world. So I get that. But why specifically that phrase is being used to denote that? And why isn't there a shot that it's referring to Olam Hazeh, that it's referring to this world itself? By David HaMelech, he's L'shem Shamayim. He's not going to do Schar for Mitzvos. David HaMelech, why would he call specifically Eretz Chaim, the Olam Haba be called Eretz Chaim? So if not for the fact that every Rishon in Akron that I could find last night, and granted it's only Medrash Tehillim, Yalkut Shimonim, and the Amloes, the Mikras Gedolos and Nach, it wasn't as many as I possibly could have gone through, but it was as many as I could find in my house and going through it. Not for the fact that nobody says this, I would say it's extremely obvious. I think it's totally partial. See, it's very difficult to see a Kaddish Baruch Hu's hand in this world working and just see how it runs and all of a sudden say, ah, I got it now. It's difficult. After things happen, maybe you can look back at it and you can say, oh, I see why that was so good. I understand now. I understand why I had to go through that pain in order to get me to the point where I am today. After the fact, you can do that. But while it's going on, it's very difficult to be able to see that. But once you do, once you have gone through that, you see how everything worked out, and how everything that seemed to be a tsar, seemed to be painful, seemed to be something that there was no way you were going to survive. You looked at it and you're like, there's no way, how am I going to do this? When all of a sudden it works out, and everything checks off, and you're sitting here like, this is great, everything worked out. Then all of a sudden you're overjoyed, you sit there and you say, after sparkle, this is awesome, I can't believe that this all happened this way. That's when all of a sudden the person feels that feeling, that connection, like there's something between them and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it only happens when you realize that. I have a story. This is a great story. And I said it in a shortened version to a couple people a couple months ago. But it is such a good story. Story takes place outside of Odessa in Russia, Western Russia. It was right outside the city. There was a man that lived there. His name was Avraham, married to a lady by the name of Leah. And they had two kids, Alexander and Sophia. Sophia was a little bit older, 9 years old. Alexander was a little bit, was a kid. And he made a good living. Avram was a handyman. And he made an okay living, just lower middle class, but still everything was good. And then World War II broke out. World War II broke out in Europe. And Russia at first was not involved. But we all know that as the war progressed, Hitler, Yamach Shemo, went toward the east, started taking over, and started going through city by city. And not only was he destroying the Russian army as he was going through, but we all know he was grabbing Jews and sending them back to Europe to the concentration camps. Now, Avram was drafted into the Russian army to go fight the Nazis. So he left. His wife and his two young children were sitting in Odessa, and it was hard for everyone. There was no food. There was nothing to drink. You had to scrounge for anything, because there was literally nothing left in these small little towns, these small little places that really had nothing there to begin with. Then all when a war happens, and everything was completely gone. But she made do with whatever she had. And then the refugees started pouring in. These people from Poland and from Hungary started streaming in through Russia. They made it through. Some of them were able to get out, and they were telling horror stories. She couldn't believe it. Concentration camps, gas camps, all these different things where Jews were being killed, and she was so worried. She heard about the advance of the Nazi army. She had no idea where they were. She had no idea where her husband was. There was no way to get a hold of them. They weren't told anything. She didn't know what to do. Should she stay and possibly be sent over to Europe if Hitler and Maximo takes over that part of the country? Should she leave and possibly never see her husband again? This is not an easy solution. She didn't know what to do. She had no idea. No one to talk to, no one to write to. What was she going to do? Finally, she said, I can't stay. He's coming too close. They were saying that the war was coming right up to that area. So she said, I have to get out. She got together all of her most valuable possessions, whatever she could, put it in a little bag, got together food and water for the trip, and she took the Trans-Siberian Railroad to get as far east as possible, to as far away from Hitler and Maximo as possible. She left notes, she left messages with people that were staying in Odessa for her husband, if her husband would ever come back, if something would happen, but that's the best she could do. Got on the train. As they're going on this train, Trans-Siberian Railroad is a long train. And if you were poor, you were starving and thirsty the entire train ride. You were not served food. You were not given anything to drink. And although she was able to fight Leah together with Sophia, they were able to survive. Alexander, this little boy, was so thirsty, so hungry the entire time, so they gave him as much water as they could. He wasn't feeling well. And finally, when the train stopped, so quickly Leah said to her daughter, Sophia, get off the train, go run and go grab water. We have 15 minutes at this stop. Go run and get water and come right back. I go with you, but Alexander's not feeling very well. But go ahead, run off, go get the water and come back. So what are you going to do? 9-year-old girl runs off the train. She goes and she goes to find whatever water source, I guess some pumps where she could get some water. She's running away. As soon as she left the train and got out of earshot, all of a sudden planes started moving overhead. They looked at it. They saw the swastikas underneath. They realized that the German army was trying to bomb the train. So the train conductor immediately blew the whistle and said, everybody on board right now, we're leaving right now. A moving target is harder to hit than a sitting target. So they started moving. Leia realizes what's happening. She looks outside for Sophia. She can't find her anywhere. She screams at the conductor, stop, stop the train, but he can't hear. She screams at the guy, please stop the train, but nobody will stop the train. Train's already moving down the track. She says, let me get off. Let me jump off with my son. They wouldn't let her do it. You're going to kill yourself. You're going to kill your son. We're not letting you jump off. She stayed on the train. Sophia, meanwhile, is going to get the water. She comes back. She sees that the train is gone. She has no idea what to do. She has no idea where her mother was going in the first place. She doesn't know. She's 9 years old. 9 years old, holding little things of water in her hand. She has no clue what to do. She starts sits down on a bench and starts crying. Now, the place had entirely cleared out. The planes that were flying overhead were still flying overhead. Everybody was gone except for a few soldiers. One of the soldiers sees a 9-year-old girl, asks her what happens. Well, he says to her, what happened? She said to him, my mother, this, my father, I have no idea where I'm going. I don't know what to do right now. She's crying and crying. He says, listen, we have an army barracks not too far from here. I'll take you there for now. Eventually, we'll be able to find another train that will take you to your mother, but for now, come with us. She started talking about her life. She said that she was a Jewish child. She had this. Her father went to war, etc. He said, you're a Jewish child. We have a Jew in our camp. He was badly injured in war. We don't know anything about him, but he's there. Maybe you could give him a little bit of strength. So she went in, she went down, she sat by the Jewish soldier. She couldn't recognize his face. It was all bloodied and filled with scars. She couldn't recognize anything, right? And she sits crying and crying and crying. Finally, the guy wakes up and asks for a little bit of water. And she goes and she gives it, and he looks at her and realizes it's his daughter. This is Avram. Avram's sitting right there. He had basically given up on life, not knowing how he was going to get back and anything like that. Sophia, this 9-year-old girl, was able to nurse her father back down. Because it's the army searched for Leia and Alexander. I'm getting these names. Leia and Alexander, all the way wherever they were. They found them, brought them back to this city wherever they were. They eventually made Aliyah, Baruch Hashem, big families, and now I'm not going to end with like their grandson as well, Yashiv. That's not how I'm going to end. But obviously, good ending. At the end, everything worked out well. See, it seemed so terrible at the time, and you can think of hundreds of stories like this, where at the time this is crazy, but at the end you look back at it and you say, this was amazing. This is the only thing that could possibly have happened, or obviously I couldn't probably think of anything. This is one of the only possibilities of something like this happening. You look at it and you say, amazing, how did this happen? I couldn't spark, this is the most amazing thing in the world. So here's what David was asking. Look right before these psukim. Horeini Hashem Darkecha. Teach me Hashem all of your ways. Unecheini Borach Mishor, and then lead me on the straight path. Laman Shoroi, against my enemies, to fight against my enemies. What David Melech is saying is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's difficult. I'm going through rough times. There's bad things happening. My son came up against me. How much more could I have against me? It's just unbelievable things happening to me, one after the other. Says David Melech, show me your ways, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Explain to me why it happened. It had to happen this way. Allow me to understand while I'm down here. Allow me to understand your purpose, your reason, your ideas, and what I'm supposed to do. And then I'll be able to do things in a little bit of a straightforward fashion. I'll feel closer to you. I'll feel more connected to you. I'll feel like there's something there. And just saying it allowed David Melech to feel like he was closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I know there's a plan. Maybe I don't know all of it, but I know there's a plan, said David Melech. Therefore, Luli Amanti Lurus Petuv Hashem Eretz Chaim. If only I would be able to see the Tuv of Hashem, the goodness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does, the Eretz Chaim, in this land, in the world, while we're still alive. If only I was able to see it, things would be so much easier for me. Hope to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it will eventually show you that plan. Strengthen yourself even in times when things are hard. And hope to HaKadosh Baruch Hu again and again and again. We're not guaranteed any answers. We're not guaranteed even the smallest bit of an answer. It could be we'll go our whole lives without understanding at all why certain things happen. Can someone really explain to me why the Jews have to go through 210 years of Mitzrayim? Can you really explain it to me? Oh, because they had to leave and they needed to be above them in Har Sinai. I understand the answers. That's not the real answer. Because Avraham said Bama Eda with two words, six letters, they get 210 years, possibly 400 years of Golus and Mitzrayim. Is that absolutely necessary? You couldn't have done it in any other way? Of course you could have done it in some other way. So explain to me, why did this need to happen? Sometimes, just saying it out, saying the words, there's a plan. There's an idea, there's something there. That's enough. That's enough. Yes. If only I was able to see the two of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Beretz Chaim. If only I was able to see it, things would be a lot easier. Nonetheless, Chazik V'Yamitz L'Vecha V'Kavi El Hashem. Sit there and say to yourself, there's so much more. And that's, I think, why Lulei are the letters of El. And that's the famous idea of why we say L'Dabar Hashem Ori, starting in Rosh Chodesh El. Because Lulei is El backwards. Lamed Vav, Lamed Aleph. It's the end of the year. The end of the year. It's not December. It's not the end of the year in June, right before the summer starts. The end of the year is right now. The beginning of the Zman, Elul Zman, is the end of our fiscal year. Our year that we go through all of our chesbonos. We take out our pinkos, we take out our little notebook, we look at everything we've done through the year, and we say to ourselves, did I do well this year or not? What have I done? What have I not done? What could I do better? How can I improve upon myself? How can I make myself better? See this idea. You're looking through, and sometimes you see patterns. Sometimes you're going to look at it and you're going to say to yourself, you know what, this makes sense now. All of a sudden, when I look back at my life and I say to myself, well, do you remember what happened last November? Well, now it makes sense why that happens. At this time, when you're able to sometimes make it a little bit better, we start off the new year with Rosh Hashanah and we say to ourselves, you know what, this year is going to be even better. We're going to make it even better for ourselves. We're going to work on ourselves out and we're going to find that connection to our Kadosh that we may be missing, that we want so badly in our lives, and we say to ourselves, let's make a cheshbon nefesh. Let's think it all the way through. That seems to me to be the message of David Melech. That is not minimizing the other two lessons. The lesson of the Malbim, the Ibn Ezra, of the Radak, to say, to always hope for the future. It's not minimizing the lesson. I think that the Gemara is trying to tell you, Shema Yigrom HaFeis, always be worried about something that may happen in the future. Think to yourself, I can always do better. It's not minimizing that. This is something different. There's something different. It's to say to yourself, there's a plan. And if there's a plan, there's something I can do with this. And I can get closer to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and feel that way. And don't stop yourself from becoming greater than you are because you think that this is all you can do. It's wrong. You're dead wrong. You can do so much more. Everyone here, on every level, can do so much more with not only their lives, but their learning, their davening, with everything they have. You can become so much greater. Just don't sell yourself short. Don't do that. That's not what Elul is. Elul isn't to make you feel bad about yourself. It's to realize you could do everything. Everything you could possibly want to do. Let's get there. Let's make it a world like that. Let's make sure that we are able, even if we can't see the Tuv Hashem Beretz Chaim, we should be able to do what we need to do to make ourselves better people.